This episode is brought to you by Progressive Insurance. Whether you love true crime or comedy, celebrity interviews or news, you call the shots on what's in your podcast queue. And guess what? Now you can call them on your auto insurance too with the Name Your Price tool from Progressive. It works just the way it sounds. You tell Progressive how much you want to pay for car insurance, and they'll show you coverage options that fit your budget. Get your quote today at Progressive.com to join the over 28 million drivers who trust Progressive. Progressive Casualty Insurance Company and Affiliates. Price and coverage match limited by state law.
I'm Sandra, and I'm just the professional your small business was looking for. But you didn't hire me because you didn't use LinkedIn Jobs. LinkedIn has professionals you can't find anywhere else, including those who aren't actively looking for a new job, but might be open to the perfect role, like me.
In a given month, over 70% of LinkedIn users don't visit other leading job sites. So if you're not looking on LinkedIn, you'll miss out on great candidates like Sandra. Start hiring professionals like a professional. Post your free job on linkedin.com/recommend today.
Hey, what's happening, everybody? Happy Monday to all of you. Nice to be with you. As we hit 6 o'clock on the nose right there.
Damn, bam.
And right on time. And right on time, Seth.
Starting off the week with a... saying the D word.
That's all right. It's going to be that kind of week.
No, new resolution, Sean. It's going to be nothing but clean and uncluttered moralistic language for me from now on.
Well, that's going to last till 6:05.
That's going to last until somebody angers me.
Yeah, exactly. Welcome in, everybody. We are with you for the next 4 hours. We are Payne and Pendergast here on Sports Radio 610. Seth, how are you this morning? Did you have a nice weekend?
I'm good. You know, I think there are probably a lot of people waking up to the news that Cam Newton, and they might be hearing it from us at first. Let me draw it out a little bit. Cam Newton, there's news on the Cam Newton front, everybody.
This came down last night. Seth, I'll let you do the honors if you want to tell the people what exactly happened last night.
This just coming over the wire 12 short hours ago.
12 hours.
Cam Newton, the MVP of 2015 and the long unemployed through this pandemic, has signed with an NFL football team. That team is the New England Patriots.
Yes, yes.
All you Jarrett Stidham fans out there will have to wait. The coronation is not scheduled for Jarrett Stidham just yet. There's going to be a competition, my friends.
Mm-hmm.
A competition between, nobody really knows what the hell kind of NFL quarterback Jarrett Stidham is. I think there are a lot of people pretty excited about him. And there were a lot of people with a sense of anticipation about Jarrett Stidham, but now you've got Cam Newton coming in on a minimum contract with a whole bunch of incentives by which he could earn $7 million, but a minimum contract nonetheless. This will be a genuine quarterback competition between Stidham and Cam Newton.
Yeah, and I think if Cam Newton is healthy or relatively healthy, Cam Newton's probably going to be the starter for this team. And Seth, I think there's many questions with this signing. I guess first and foremost is, what does a relatively healthy Cam Newton, like, Cam's not going to be the MVP of the league again. Cam's days as a peak NFL 15-1 quarterback, I think it's safe to say, I feel confident in saying those days are probably over. But what is in that division, which where the other three quarterbacks are Josh Allen, Sam Darnold, and in either Fitzy or Tua Tagovailoa, what does an 80% of what he used to be Cam Newton do for the Patriots in that
division? Well, I think that he can still do a lot of the same things he used to do. The biggest question really is, what is his physical health like?
Right.
Now, I read by Bill Barnwell this morning at ESPN.com that the Liz Frank injury doesn't usually affect quarterbacks all that much. And I thought, well, maybe, because he brought up Matt Schaub as an example of a guy it didn't affect. I think Matt Schaub, though he had that injury in 2011 and came back and had a good year in 2012, that was a year that was aided so much by the defense creating so many great opportunities for the offense that it kind of masked that Schaub wasn't the same guy he used to be. Mm-hmm. And by 2013, he became the Matt Schaub that's emblazoned in our minds. So I don't know. Cam Newton's shoulder was reportedly better when he got back last year, but then he hurt his foot. And we really haven't seen a healthy Cam Newton in over 1.5 seasons. In 2018, first half of the season in 2018, he was an MVP candidate. He was doing really good things. He's not that much older than that now. I think there's a lot left in the tank potentially for Cam Newton. And let's remember, Sean, who is his head coach now versus who is his head coach in Carolina? He's got Bill Belichick now versus Ron Rivera. Ron Rivera's win-loss record as a head coach is no more impressive than Cam Newton's, who's only had three winning seasons in his entire tenure. I think that you might actually get, in some ways, the best version of Cam Newton if he can really absorb what Bill Belichick wants to teach him.
That's the other question, I think, is that relationship. Because if someone had told you a few years ago, Seth, that Cam Newton would be playing for Bill Belichick, well, first of all, if they had told you a few years ago, you would have said, that's crazy. Cam was the MVP 2 years ago. Why would Carolina ever let Cam Newton go? They drafted him first overall in 2011 for a reason, so he could be the quarterback for 15 years in Carolina like all franchise quarterbacks are. Well, fate stepped in, and Cam got injured and banged up, and now here we are. Matt Rhule's the coach in Carolina, and Teddy Bridgewater is their quarterback. So now Cam Newton is in New England with Bill Belichick, and I think that's the other question, is that how are those two personalities going to mix? I think it's going to mix just fine. I think a lot of Cam's maybe glitches that he has in terms of handling things. You know, Cam has been a guy who's sulked from time to time. I do think it comes from a place of being hyper-competitive. And I think from that standpoint, you know, the things that Bill Belichick values the most probably are things that Cam Newton does embody. That student of the game, wants to win, loves football, all of those things. So I think the relationship, as long as Cam's healthy and he's playing, I think the relationship's going to work out fine. Are they going to achieve to the level they did with Tom Brady? I wouldn't bet on it, but of all the divisions in the AFC, maybe of all the divisions in football, this remains the one that is most imminently winnable by one team that finds some sort of incremental edge over the other three, the AFC East.
Oh, poor AFC East, man. Yeah. These three other teams had such high hopes. And for two, three blessed months, it was, hey, the AFC East without Tom Brady, our overlord. And it's anybody's game at this point.
Yeah.
The Patriots, they'll be lucky to be in the conversation. And now it goes back to not a sense of dread, awe, or anything, but still that sense that, oh boy, here we go again. Here's Bill Belichick doing something a little unconventional, but that makes perfect sense. And I think also, Sean, This might be Bill Belichick's moment to retain that status as the team that veteran players want to go to at a discount, right? Before, that was always for non-quarterbacks. You would go to play in New England because Bill Belichick and Tom Brady gave you your best chance of winning a championship if you wanted to get one. So this is Cam Newton, ironically, coming on the residue of Tom Brady's legacy, thinking, okay, this is my best chance to win a championship. He's going to be a free agent next year. It's not clear whether the Patriots maybe relinquished a right to franchise tag him, same way the Seahawks did with Clowney last year. But even if they franchise tag him, Cam Newton's got a chance to get a big payday if he has a good year. And that would kind of establish, or it would, you know, reaffirm the status of the Patriots as a place, if you're a veteran player, I'll go play there at a discount.
Yeah, it's an interesting dynamic, because I think you're right. I think you can look at both sides of this like, wow, this is great for Belichick, because that's a pretty big name around the league that's affirming what you just said, that the Patriots are still a place to go win, you know, and it's not because of Tom Brady. It's replacing Tom Brady. So I think the flip side, though, you could make an argument on Cam Newton's half of things that, man, the dude found a pretty soft landing spot for a quarterback who was sitting out there in late June in a league where, quite honestly, most of the starting positions at quarterback are spoken for already.
But look what he had to do. You know, he's coming in for close to minimum.
Right.
But it's only a soft landing spot because it's the Patriots. Like, yeah. if he had taken the same contract in San Diego, what would our response be right now?
That he's probably a little bit desperate, and he'd be competing with the sixth overall pick for a starting spot. Yeah. That's my point, is that it's, you know, slots like playing for the Patriots, even this version of the Patriots, which is a lesser version of what we're historically used to, is, man, that's for June 28th, that's pretty good. You know, even, and Cam's made a lot of money, you know, so he's looking at it, he's betting on himself and seeing if he can get an opportunity to make more. I think the bottom line, what you and I are both saying, is this is something that seems to make sense for both sides.
It makes sense. I'm being bullish on it, though. Yeah. I'm not. I don't have my one toe in the water. I think it's going to be a really good year for Cam Newton.
All right. So let's.
By the way, did you have Justin Herbert as a sixth overall pick? Was that just did that come that quickly to your brain?
Yeah.
Do you remember,
I remember
it that well.
Yeah. He was a sixth overall. He was right after Tua, who was the fifth overall pick.
After the top three picks, it's all a big quagmire.
You know what it is, Seth? Quarterbacks, I remember. You can name any quarterback, and I could tell you where, if there was picked in the first round. And
Joe Ferguson. Oh, never mind.
No, in the first round. No, you got to keep it in this decade.
Was Joe Ferguson not a first round?
I have no idea. All right, let's stick with Cam Newton. How we discussed how he's going to mix with his head coach. How is he going to mix with the playbook in New England? And also, it is a strange coincidence what happened with the quarterback carousel, as it turns out, this offseason. That's next. I think one of the big questions people have about Cam Newton going to New England, Seth, is what's the playbook going to look like? You know, because they've been doing it a certain way for the last two decades with Tom Brady. And I guess my reaction to that, after thinking about it for a few seconds, is I wouldn't be too concerned about it. One, I think Bill Belichick... Let me back up. Bill O'Brien's whole game plan offense deal is a spawn of being in New England for so long. Like that,
right.
That's where it comes from. And you know, it's the game plan offense is basically a code for we're going to do what makes the most sense to do with our personnel.
Yes.
And I think New England is going to take advantage of the things. I don't think New England's plugging in Cam Newton so that he can dink and dunk and find little slot receivers over the middle for, you know, 52 plays a game or something like that. And I would also remind people that his offensive coordinator will be Josh McDaniels, who did draft Tim Tebow at one time.
They drafted Tim Tebow and arguably got the most out of Tim Tebow in terms of team success, right? Mm-hmm. That Tebow would ever have as an NFL quarterback, as a pro quarterback. I think that it's important to remember that the Patriots have not been the same offense for the last 20 years. They've evolved a lot. And at one point, they were a three wide receiver dominant offense. At another point, they were a two tight end dominant offense. Later, they adopted a lot of Chip Kelly's principles before Chip Kelly even got to the NFL and used a lot of tempo. And then even over the last couple of years at various times, they've transitioned within the season to where, you know, when they went to the Super Bowl versus the Rams, they turned into a run dominant offense. By the second half of the season, hey, we're a team that's going to run the ball. So I don't think there's really almost even anything to be concerned about as to, okay, well, how are the Patriots going to adapt to Cam Newton? I suppose the biggest question would be, in a shortened preseason with limited opportunities perhaps for quarterbacks to actually compete or have combined practices or anything, how do you install two different offenses? Because remember Jarrett Stidham goes to Auburn and it was a little bit of a mismatch with scheme, right? And I think that likewise, if you're trying to run a Jarrett Stidham offense or a Cam Newton offense at the same time in camp, they're going to be different looking things.
Well, especially, look, Jarrett Stidham and Cam Newton essentially played for the same play caller in college. You know what I mean? Like and Cam Newton won a Heisman Trophy. Jarrett Stidham felt like a square peg in a round hole. So, you know, Gus Malzahn was not Cam Newton's head coach, but he may as well have been. He was the OC under Gene Chizik for that team that won the national championship. And, you know, Gus was the brains of the operation, at least offensively, for that team. So, yeah, like, even if we want to look at the two quarterbacks that we're talking about here, Stidham and Newton, both guys who went to Auburn, there is that commonality there that the guy that they played for at the collegiate level was the same guy, or at least from a play caller perspective, was the same guy. So, yeah, it's going to be interesting. The other thing, Seth, that I think about with New England is, yeah, you get amped up, you get excited about what Cam Newton might be able to do if he's healthy. Let's keep in mind, a big reason why Tom Brady probably the Patriots fell out of favor with Tom Brady is they did not surround him with weapons in his later years there.
Yeah.
You know, especially the last season after Gronk retired. Man, you go look at the Patriots depth chart right now, and at least from a name value perspective, it's Julian Edelman and a bunch of guys that the average football fan has not heard of. Like, literally. Like, You know, I know N'Keal Harry was a first-round pick. You ask the average NFL fan who N'Keal Harry is, they have no clue. It's Julian Edelman. Their starting tight end is Matt Lacoste right now.
That's what we were saying during the Patriots game. Where's N'Keal Harry? Oh, he's running the wrong routes.
Yeah.
He's creating interceptions.
Right.
He's a Kiki QT of the first round.
Yeah.
But this is the other thing that Cam Newton brings to the table. Cam Newton makes offensive linemen look way better than they are. Way better. There have been offensive lines where Matt Khalil got paid in Carolina. Do you know why? Because of Cam Newton.
Yeah.
That contract that they gave to Matt Khalil was one of the dumbest things I've seen, other than the Texans expecting Matt Khalil to start at left tackle for him. It was crazy. And part of it's because Cam makes offensive linemen better. So what's happened in New England this offseason? Oh, one of the best offensive line coaches in NFL history decided to retire. The last time he left, the Patriots offensive line under the Googly Elmo fella had a really rough go of it. So you bring Cam Newton in, and if he plays, that offensive line all of a sudden becomes a whole lot better because Cam Newton always has to be accounted for as part of the rushing attack. And that puts doubt and that puts indecisiveness into the minds of defenses, and it just flat out makes offensive linemen better.
Yeah. Do you feel like this signing of Cam Newton, which, you know, Jarrett Stidham's not going anywhere. He's going to be there. I don't know if bullish is the right word, but I think my guess is Bill Belichick thinks highly of Jarrett Stidham as a prospect, at least. Does this put Brian Hoyer's teacher's pet status on serious, serious display? Like, Brian Hoyer is the only one in that room who has started significant games in the league in this particular ecosystem.
This is what the Patriots will do regardless of whichever scheme they're running. Like, whatever you want to say their offense looks like, it's going to involve, ideally, a whole lot of checks at the line of scrimmage. It's going to involve the quarterback being really involved in the pass protection, all that stuff. All that's really complex stuff that works really well for them. Nobody knows it better than Brian Hoyer.
Yeah.
And the same way Matt Schaub, who is still an active NFL player in Atlanta, that's because
incredible.
He knew the system that right. Kyle Shanahan wanted to install, I think Hoyer has to grab onto this opportunity to become one of the best paid coaches in the NFL.
Coach in the room, baby.
Player coach in the room. Yeah, he could play until he's 40 as like the personal tutor to Cam Newton.
Strange coincidence with this whole thing, and if you're up early, we're talking about, and you may not have even heard yet, Cam Newton signing a deal with the New England Patriots last night, a one-year incentive-laden deal. Seth, it's remarkable how this worked out just in terms of the carousel this offseason with quarterbacks. This essentially, with Newton signing in New England, Seth, became what amounts to a four-team trade when you look at it. And I don't know if you've done this math yet, but Tom Brady leaves New England to go to Tampa Bay.
Yep.
Jameis Winston, then forced out of Tampa Bay, goes to New Orleans to be the backup to Drew Brees.
Yeah.
Teddy Bridgewater, and it didn't go in this order, but Teddy Bridgewater no longer the backup to Drew Brees, so he signs in Carolina, forcing Cam Newton out. And Cam Newton, what does he do? He signs in New England to take Brady's spot. So it's essentially four teams that have, it's basically like one big version of wife swap is what it is. I mean, the chronological sequencing, I'd have to sit down and think who signed where and when, but that's basically what Tampa Bay, New Orleans, Carolina, and New England have essentially done a gigantic wife swap is what it is.
I feel like you've got some cyclonic action there too.
Yeah.
Like you've got a swirling of in a clockwise fashion. Does a cyclone go clockwise or counterclockwise?
I've never been in one before, and I don't care to be in one.
Take note of it the next time your house and little dog gets swept up in a tornado. Tell me what the cyclonic action is.
Cyclonic. Yeah. So, yeah, I thought there was an interesting little coincidence with that.
And it's three NFC South teams and one AFC East team. It's almost so the AFC East is accepting the sputum of the NFC South.
That's right. Yeah. They are being the open thinkers here by accepting an NFC South quarterback into the mix. Absolutely. All right. So off and running here on a Monday, big news, Cam Newton, a New England Patriot. And that's certainly adds some star power to the AFC and the conference that the Texans are trying to continue to ascend in. We'll talk more about that as the show rolls on today. Back to baseball. We are going to get baseball, we hope, pretty soon. Jeff Passan laid it out this weekend, though, points out several issues with keeping baseball restarted, including what happens if a player gets the COVID on the road, ranking the cities that an Astro could find himself quarantined in. Next. We're going to get to Jeff Passan's piece on baseball keeping its restart open amidst the coronavirus in just a second. We should mention here, though, that there was another big Patriot-related story last night. And Seth, God, I feel like the two of us are sheep in terms of how this stuff was leaked out there by the Patriots and by the league. You know, it was...
Oh, the fact that the Cam Newton signing and the Patriots being punished for the staffer who filmed the Bengals sideline during a game this last year, supposedly for part of just a little profile piece he was doing on one of the Patriots' advanced scout. Yeah, the NFL thought, okay, we're not buying that completely. You're going to get fined a third-round draft pick and $1.1 million.
Right. But that news dropped about 15 minutes after we were all a flutter over Cam Newton being in New England. So it was, if you're a New England Patriot fan or a sycophant, maybe more appropriately, this news was released perfectly because it got buried underneath all the Cam Newton news. And Seth, it took till 6:31 for you and I to even mention it on the show. And I feel like we were victims of this ruse. Victims of this sequential release of news.
It was, somehow even when the Patriots lose, they end up winning. But that whole ordeal, which I feel that it, in some respects it was kind of like, the Patriots got caught with somebody's joint in their backpack and their excuse was, oh no, somebody put it there, because they did. They ended up with film of the opposing team's sideline signals, the scouting area there, but they had an explanation of like, well, hey, this is an independent contractor that we hired to do a documentary. It's got nothing to do with football ops. The guy that filmed it said, hey, he's never received a request or directive to send it to football ops. Yeah, but Bob Kraft's company's got possession of the opposing sideline. You're not allowed to have that in your possession. If I get caught with a kilo of coke in my van, it's in my van. Like, no excuse short of like somebody putting it there by gunpoint is going to get me off of that.
It is, I
Don't
guess.
Don't tell anybody about the kilo of coke in my van.
Yeah, no. Well, you just told a big audience, but that's okay.
If I can give a wink over the radio, any law enforcement that would find it there could just take half.
Right. Yeah. There you go. I would say, Seth, your point is a good point. My counterpoint to that would be, I kind of believe the Patriots because it was the Bengals sideline. Hey, who's filming the Bengals sideline to try to get an advantage? You know what I mean? Like,
because that's the trap you fall into, Sean.
Okay.
Okay. Well, what happens on NFL teams? Oh, various offensive coordinators go from one place to another. It was the Bengals last year. Look, let's remember this is the Bengals with a brand new head coach. Yeah. How does a team maintain its dominance over multiple teams over so many years? It's grabbing little bits of information here or there, whether legally begotten or illegally begotten. And that's where that part of it makes sense. Like, is there some part of you that thinks Bill Belichick is wired to say, well, we're only going to try really hard against the good teams, and the bad teams we won't try real hard against?
No, and I get what you're saying. Like, in 2 years when Zach Taylor's fired with the Bengals, but he's the offensive coordinator in Miami or something like that, and they're playing him twice a year, they'll have all of his signals and whatnot.
Oh, yeah, yeah. It's these small gains. That's why so many billionaires are still penny pinchers in so many respects.
Yeah.
They know how to – they're just wired to go after these small gains all the time. I'm guessing that they didn't find any evidence of the Patriots being master architects of this or anything. It feels like, okay, look, guys, you're the Patriots. You know you're under the microscope. Be better. Don't be dumbasses when it comes to this stuff. And there's no way we, the NFL, can let you off the hook on this because, my goodness, look at what you guys had, you dumbasses.
Yep. $1.1 million and a third-round pick, as Seth mentioned earlier, is the punishment for the New England Patriots. All right, so Jeff Passan had a very long-form piece this weekend, Seth. And as cryptically as Jeff Passan tweets sometimes about things, news items, where he kind of leads us astray because he uses a lot of pronouns and he's not very clear on Twitter and laying things out. He's really good when you give him the long form of an article where he can do 20 questions to lay things out. This is the pieces he's had during this coronavirus on baseball and the collective bargaining, as well as the actual medical piece, have been really, really good. It's a really good reference point for how baseball is going to try to handle this. And even more so, Seth, what baseball is up against in trying to manage this coronavirus pandemic. And he brings up a variety of interesting points that you and I can react to here. And to me, this is the first one is an issue that is an issue with both football and baseball. Less so an issue with basketball because they're employing the bubble concept. But there's a ton of trust being put into players being responsible away from the ballpark. And they can take all the measures they want to with disinfecting the clubhouse, keeping guys in lockers that are socially distanced from one another, you know, 6 feet apart, that kind of thing. Making sure that people are wearing masks in the dugout. Basically, all the things that you can do once people set foot on the property where baseball is being conducted.
Mm-hmm.
But in baseball and football, these guys aren't staying in a bubble. They're not, unlike basketball, they're not going to jump on a disinfected bus to go to a disinfected hotel and hopefully stay in that disinfected hotel or just play video games all day. These guys are going to go home. Or, maybe worse, at least one of them is either going to A, go out somewhere that's not safe, or B, have people within their inner circle where they live or that hang out with them that are not conducting themselves in an entirely safe manner. It's one of those things, Seth, where this is truly one of those situations if you're trying to avoid an outbreak of the coronavirus where you're only as strong as your weakest link, and the weakest link is a really, really scary, slippery slope on this one.
Right, you're gonna have positive tests. Like, we know that, and it's just a matter of okay, how can you minimize it? Because even though that weak, the problem is, how many weak links are you gonna have in the clubhouse? If you have one weak link, you know, it's been well established that it's not like somebody walks into a room and if there's 10 people in that room and one person has the coronavirus, that everybody gets the coronavirus, right? It's not as simple as that. So you're trying to minimize the opportunities and the instances and how many total people these people infect. So for one, okay, somebody's going to go out to a party. Somebody's kid is going to come back from school. That's what I honestly worry about more than anything is the kids. When the kids are going back to school, my baseball player is going to have those kids come into his home. There's a good chance they catch it. I think that it's a matter of minimizing things. Look at the NBA who, upon retesting so far, I think it's fewer than 10 NBA players. Is it about 300?
It was 16 out of 302.
16 out of 302. Those numbers are far smaller than, say, the Clemson football team, where it looks like one out of two guys have tested positive.
Yeah, they're all going to have herd immunity by the time the season rolls around.
Yeah, I think that, which you wonder if Dabo Swinney has...
he's encouraging them to cough on each other.
I'm not saying that's what he did, but I'm saying I wouldn't be surprised if that came out, especially with getting a big old group prayer.
Yeah,
but
no, that's what I'm saying. They
Lord's
all cough on each other and then kneel in prayer.
Yeah, so I think that you're going to be able to manage it better with adults. So just by virtue of the fact that NBA players are seemingly a little bit more mature. Even though NBA players and other professional athletes like to go out and party, they are not necessarily as likely to have been like jumping up and down in Cabo with, you know, with 2,000 other people in the middle of a rave or something. It's a little bit more of a subdued party lifestyle. I think that just by virtue of getting tested three times a week, it's going to keep guys a lot more honest away from the facility.
Okay, which Astro concerns you the most as far as bringing the coronavirus into the clubhouse because of maybe a carefree or careless lifestyle?
Forrest Whitley.
Easily 100%. Forrest Whitley, right?
Forrest Whitley is on this expanded pool that they're bringing back into the fold.
Yeah, that's a good point. They just announced their 60-man roster yesterday afternoon.
Forrest Whitley, who supposedly accidentally took Adderall or Ritalin. Forrest Whitley, who came back to camp out of shape this year and not ready to pitch.
Yeah.
Forrest Whitley, who somehow is still a top prospect in the national rankings despite falling all over himself and having a double-digit ERA in AAA last year.
Yeah.
All of these things. Forrest Whitley. If Forrest Whitley could be the one guy, the big overweight straw that breaks the camel's back.
Yeah, I could just see Forrest Whitley making out with three chicks at a bar who all have the coronavirus, and he just comes in and does a clean sweep of the clubhouse with the damn thing.
And one of them has a sign that says, "Kiss me, I've got the coronavirus."
yeah, right, exactly.
He feels like he's got Ryan Mallett tendencies to him.
That's a
big arm, big arm, tall, lanky, stretch of water, stretchy glass of water, and just kind of a jackass in some respects, right?
Yeah.
He's the exact, is he not 100% exactly the opposite of the guy least likely to get the COVID, Michael Brantley?
Yes, he
is. Who the hell is Michael Brantley going to be socializing with? He's cozying up with a book and his wife.
100%. Yeah. 100%. I would have said Mariznick, but he's not on the team anymore. You know what I mean? Mariznick, I think, is kind of, you know, probably not as openly careless as Forrest Whitley, but I feel like Mariznick, the chicks love Mariznick. You know what I mean?
But Mariznick, listen, Mariznick's going to take all the proper precautions.
Yeah.
He's going to use all kinds of plastic barriers down below, even up top with a dental dam.
Right.
And then he's going to cook you eggs in a cup of coffee in the morning. What Mariznick does. Mariznick doesn't take any chances. Not with the COVID, not with your emotions, not with love, Sean.
Does Bregman getting married help minimize the chance that Bregman is the guy who goes out and gets the COVID?
I think so. I think because Bregman kind of like Mariznick had the looks going for him and kind of like a boyish charm, where Bregman's got that glint in his eye that I would imagine a lot of girls found pretty attractive, but now he's locked down.
He was also always hanging out with that little group of friends. And again, Seth, that my concern is less so the actual players themselves.
Oh,
than
yeah.
the four or five guys that they hang out with all the time.
Yeah, we got to hope maybe that Bregman's wife is maybe they're very devoted and committed to each other.
Yeah.
And to the point where his friends are like, bro, you've changed. That's what we want the most. I hope to hell that right now Bregman's friends, his buddies, his bros are totally devastated by the fact that Bregman doesn't hang out as much as he used to.
I love that you just said maybe they're committed and devoted to each other. Like, that's like seeing a unicorn among professional athletes.
No. I mean, like, where it's like, yeah,
me
I got
too,
this
they're
friend.
Married.
No. I'm thinking of my friend Tom McManus. He was he played in Jacksonville. He was a really good college player at Boston College.
Right.
But Tom was like, could not get enough of going out. Yeah. He was just this Irish guy that he'd worked as a bartender the couple years while he was trying to make it kind of on practice squads and stuff. Like, just a really affable, outgoing guy. He met his wife, who he's still married to this day, and it was like the biggest 180 I've ever seen. Mm. He was just like, that's it for me. I met the one. And it was like, you couldn't get Tom to go out. And it wasn't like his wife was, you know, whipping him or anything like that. He just changed. He was like, I've got everything I want in life. This is what I want. I want a nice, quiet life and raise my kids and off we go.
How many weeks did it last? No, I'm just kidding.
It's lasted like 18 years.
So really? He's still that way now, huh?
Sean, he was, he did.
Sucker.
I've said his name now. This is one of these things where I have to, listen.
Walk the plank.
This isn't a story from before he was married. This is a story from the night he got married. This was like the last truly, genuinely crazy thing he did. Tom got married and, you know, nice big family wedding there in Ponte Vedra, Florida, and all of his relatives and her relatives were there. And comes time for him to take the garter belt off of his wife. And
you've told this story before. Continue.
Yeah, but I've never said the name. He got really, I'll just say this, he got super frisky with his wife, his newlywed wife.
He was under the hood for a while seeing what the engine was doing.
To the point where it got kind of awkward and uncomfortable.
That guy changed his lifestyle around.
That was 1990, that was 2000, that was the year 2000. And here he is, 20 years later, happily married with a couple of teenage daughters.
That's something out of a Will Ferrell movie. Like, you know what I mean? Like, that's unbelievable. That's unbelievable. All right, continuing with Jeff Passan, who brings up some interesting points about baseball, trying to come back and trying to minimize the chance that there's a COVID sweep through the clubhouse. He talks about this part, Seth, that there will be stern talks. This is a quote, stern talks from veteran players at the beginning of camp, where they basically lay out the letter of the law with the younger guys, really with the whole clubhouse, but I would imagine targeted at the younger guys to say, hey, man, like, this is a big deal. Like, we have got to take this really, really seriously. You've got to, when you leave here, go home. Don't go out. Have other people do your grocery shopping, whatever it is you need to do. But Passan is saying that this is something that's going to be a huge talking point in Clubhouse, where leadership in the clubhouse is going to be accentuated. For me, this feels like a George Springer deal for the Astros. This feels like a George Springer talk with the clubhouse, especially because he's going to be like, listen, bleepers, I'm on a contract year, and I got to have a good year heading into free agency.
Except George would never frame it that way, because that would be a selfish way to frame it. Yeah. You know, like, you guys, Springer would be the last guy to get up and say, "Hey guys, do it for me, right, because I want to. I got to get mine." I don't think that's going to be Springer.
But he's thinking it. You know, he's thinking it.
I think Springer genuinely, you know, obviously cares about team success, and he is one of the elder guys now. Boy, you think about the fact that Gattis, McCann, all these guys, you know, that have left over the last couple seasons, how the composition of the leadership in the clubhouse has changed somewhat. And you're looking at guys like Correa and Springer. Springer's always been kind of that heart and soul type of guy, but I don't think we've ever really talked about him as necessarily one of the elder leaders, which is weird, right? Because he's an older player by now. He's in his upper 20s, and he's got all the right stuff. But he's also just such a fun-going and easy-going guy that I felt like he led by example more than vocally, where now maybe it does become more of a vocal leader.
Yeah, these are different times now, you know, and you got to reinforce that message. Seth, this one was interesting, and this is something I had not thought about. Jeff Passan outlining, what if players test positive for the coronavirus? Well, they'll be put into quarantine for a couple of weeks. Okay, what if they test positive for the coronavirus on the road? You're on a road trip somewhere and you test positive for the coronavirus. They ain't throwing you back on the team plane. They are going to go find an apartment or a hotel. They're going to leave somebody from the team behind with the player or players who are quarantined, so they're taken care of. And these guys are going to be quarantined in a road city for
a couple of
weeks.
Is that clear, or is that conjecture?
No, it sounded clear in the article that that's what's going to happen. That they're going.
Yeah, I mean, I wasn't clear if that was just like him
saying,
"I'll
go find it." Yeah,
this is obvious. Don't worry about it. It's not that big a deal. I think that it would be a matter of, it seems like it'd be easier just to send a private jet and just solo back to Houston, so they could be in the care of team medical staff and whatnot. But yeah, if they keep them on quarantine in that city in a hotel for 14 days, that's a logistical nightmare.
Here's the exact paragraph. Here's how it's worded. So you may be right. Maybe it's not finalized, but this is Passan. And I'm guessing Passan has talked to people. If home is within driving distance, he can head there. So in other words, if it's Arlington, you get in a car, you drive back to Houston. Yeah. But the Astros are in a division where that's the only one that's within driving distance is Arlington. If not, he's probably stuck in a road city for at least a week or two. Communication and cooperation among teams will be paramount if baseball is going to happen in 2020. Players will test positive on the road, and when they do, the road team will want to consult with the home team to find a proper place to stay, whether it's a hotel, condo, or otherwise. Further, the team whose player tests positive will ensure an employee remains in town with him to ensure his well-being and recovery. Teams will do the same already in concussion cases. Okay, yeah. So they already do that, obviously, for a much shorter period of time than 2 weeks when players get concussed on the road.
I'm going to tell you one thing right now, Sean, and you don't have to worry about the player as much as you have to worry about which support staffer do they think isn't so important that we need him, but he's mature enough to handle being like the personal guardian to George Springer for 2 weeks.
That's a tough Venn diagram right there.
Like, he's somebody, so he's not essential enough that we need him with the team for 2 weeks, but he's smart enough and capable enough to handle this. This is where I almost feel like it needs to be a retired player like Biggio. Biggio needs to be, let's say Springer gets sick on the road, or it gets a test positive. It needs to be somebody like Biggio, not Bagwell, Biggio, to go and be sure everything's smoothed over with everything.
The only problem with that, Seth, is Biggio is in his mid-50s now, so he's approaching the age where he's, you know, the coronavirus endangers him more than it endangers others. Honestly, my guess is it might be one of those prodigies that, you know, is like an intern with the team who's in the age bracket where the COVID doesn't hurt him, but he's got the eagerness to want to do the best possible job at taking care of Justin Verlander or George Springer or Alex Bregman on the road.
I don't trust those guys. You know why?
Why?
because I think of that. Taubman. That's a young Brandon Taubman.
You didn't even need to say his name. I knew exactly who you were talking about.
B. Tobbs. I got used to calling him B. Tobbs. So Brandon Taubman, who was the one that berated the reporters in the clubhouse that night.
Yeah. Which of the eight cities that the Astros will play road games in? Because Los Angeles has two teams. Which of the eight road cities would you most want to get quarantined in, and which would you want to get least quarantined in?
I think for most quarantine, if I'm going to abide by the quarantine as I would and just stay in my hotel room or in my Airbnb, ideally, an Airbnb with a pool.
Still allowed to go outside, but on your own property.
I'm going to say San Francisco. I'd say San Francisco because the weather is most likely to be ideal. San Diego actually gets pretty hot in the summer. I remember we played there in September one year, the inaugural year, and I went out and I had dinner with my, in the late afternoon with my family, and I was kind of like, all right, bro, this San Diego weather is a little overrated right this moment. Yeah. I was hot in jeans.
What about Denver?
San Francisco. Oh boy, you're tired. That's got the ideal weather.
You get an Airbnb facing the mountains.
Yeah, but then that's almost too enticing. Of course, you could probably go out for some nice walks in Colorado. I'd have them put me up in Vail or Breckenridge or something. You know,
drive you like, 2 hours into the mountains.
Yeah. I would do that because then I could be out and I could get my trail runs in and everything. It'd be nice and safe. You give me a 2,000-acre spread on some ranch out there, and I'll be cool.
I think the race for last place is a two-city race, is it not? It's
Oakland and Arlington.
Oakland and Arlington, right?
Arlington.
Like, those are easily the worst two.
Look, and I think a lot of times people think I'm joking about Arlington's chlamydia issues. I'll just point to this, 2016 to 2017, biggest percentage increase in syphilis cases, second biggest in the nation in Tarrant County. You cannot trust the various people with basically not just coronavirus, but various STD germs jumping off of their clothes as they try to get close to your Astros player.
Right.
I don't trust them.
And if you're wondering, why should I listen to Seth Payne on this topic? Because before he was the coronavirus commissioner of Harris County, he was the chlamydia commissioner.
I was a chlamydia commissioner of Tarrant County right up until 2015. You'll notice in 2016 and 2017, chlamydia cases just they skyrocketed.
That's when social distancing for chlamydia went away.
If they can't handle chlamydia, a disease that frankly I hadn't really heard about since health class in high school, how do you think they're doing with the coronavirus?
That's right.
Stupid Tarrant County.
That's right. All right. There a lot of news. Going on in the last 24 hours. Cam Newton is going to be a New England Patriot. We'll talk some more about that. Also, the NBA is playing 88 regular season games over a two-week period. The 12 most important games of that stretch, and how many involve the Rockets? That's next.
This episode is brought to you by Progressive Insurance. Whether you love true crime or comedy, celebrity interviews or news, you call the shots on what's in your podcast queue. And guess what? Now you can call them on your auto insurance, too, with the Name Your Price tool from Progressive. It works just the way it sounds. You tell Progressive how much you want to pay for car insurance, and they'll show you coverage options that fit your budget. Get your quote today at Progressive.com to join the over 28 million drivers who trust Progressive. Progressive Casualty Insurance Company and Affiliates. Price and coverage match limited by state law.